Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Moon, Moo, and You, The Collective Wisdom. Our guest this evening is Sheila Odette, otherwise known as Astrology's Astrologer, at www.astrologysastrologer.com. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Last week, on the 6th of January, my dear dog, Mukunda, died in my arms. This evening, we will be discussing how our animal companion friends still communicate with us after they pass on. I have one remaining dog named Ulysses who is by my side right now. Sheila has done charts on my dogs and explains how they interweave with my own. Joining me now is Joan Adams. Hello, dear Joan.
Good afternoon, Kate. This is going to be so interesting to hear.
I know.
I just really am anxious to hear what Sheila says about the dogs and you and all of us and our dogs. I know they communicate with us. So.
Yes, just think of, I think a lot of people would be interested in having their own charts done in this manner.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. Without that. Oh, yes.
Yeah, totally so. This is so exciting. And here is Sheila.
Hi.
Hi, Sheila.
Hi, Joan. How are you?
I'm great.
Hi, Kate. How are you?
Hello, dear Sheila. How are you?
Hi. I'm doing, you've asked me to do Mukunda's chart.
Sure.
Well, you know, I thought you were going to cry.
I'm sorry?
I said I thought you were going to cry, and I'm crying.
Oh, no.
I did manage to get through that.
Yeah, well, you managed to get through it. Just put it into me because now I'm crying. But I'm holding it, okay?
We're holding it together, okay.
We're holding it together. So I wanted to just start out by saying Mukunda was a Capricorn dog, okay?
Mm.
And when you have a Capricorn dog with Neptune in Capricorn and Jupiter in Capricorn, Capricorn is somebody that's been with you in many lifetimes, especially if it's in the animal kingdom. It means Capricorn rules the antiquities. It rules ancient time. It rules other lifetimes. So then you go to Kate's chart and you go, okay, so how does that go into Kate's chart, and then you see that Mukunda's son, which is his seed, which is his seed here on Earth, and the sacred circle that's around that seed, was at 20 degrees of Capricorn, and then you go to Kate's chart, and you see that her moon is at 22 degrees of Capricorn. So that means out of 360 degrees in the zodiac, that the moon, which is the emotional connection, which is the environment in the chart with which you, I call the moon the emotional cycle. It is exactly almost on top of Kate's sun. So that means basically when you see a sun-moon conjunction like that, it means that the two the beings are, the dog is really a totem. It's a spirit guide that has come down in the body of, you know, the animal. And so there's a car connection. And, you know, it reminds me, if people have not seen Avatar, which I'm going to tell everybody in the universe to see, they have a thing, one of these things when they go to the other land in Pandora, where they have tails that have strings coming out of them, And what they do with their totem, like their horse or the bird that they ride, they hook in to the horse or the bird or whatever they're riding at the time. But both the animal, which is the horse, and the person have to both choose each other. So when I look at this chart, when I see the sun and the moon, I say, oh, wow, these people really hooked into each other. Now, the interesting thing in this chart, and it's also in the house of communication, which means, Kate, you had a language with Mukunda that was spectacular, which was a heart language, which means that you knew exactly what the dog was doing and what you were doing even before it happened. The other thing about Mukunda's chart is he has one of these, I seem to be doing a lot of these moon charts. It's a half a moon. So the moon in this chart is in Aquarius, which means basically when you have the sun in Capricorn, Neptune in Capricorn, Jupiter in Capricorn, and then the next thing up is Vesta in Aquarius and Uranus in Aquarius, which is its own sign, and the moon in Aquarius. It means it is really an ancient soul that really did not have to come back. They had done all of the work that they had to do. And when you have an opening sun for me like this, it means they said, I'm going to go back and do this extra work with this person. So it's truly, truly a soul connection. And again, the whole mandala being that the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th house on the right side of the chart is empty. And the other side of the chart from the 11th to the 4th is full, the half moon on the eastern part of the chart means that basically it's an emotional connection. Now, the interesting thing about this is when Mukunda passed, mm-hmm. everything was lined up exactly the way he came in.
Wow.
So, his gestation point was 19 degrees of Cancer. His sun was the 20 degrees of Capricorn. When I see a gestation point lined up exactly to the ninth house cusp, it means that they went out and were welcomed almost the same as they came in. They did their job. It's almost like going directly out the same channel you came in. So that is absolutely only by a half a degree lined up. I think that is like, huh? It's
wow.
like pretty. Yeah, it's
that
like
is
pretty,
so awesome. Yeah.
And then Pluto was in Capricorn, of course, and it just went in. And Mercury is retrograde in Capricorn, and it was, you know, it went retrograde on December the 27th in Capricorn, right after Christmas. And we had, you know, all the eclipses in December. And now we're having another, and a blue moon. Now we had an eclipse on New Year's Eve, which was huge. And now we're having another eclipse in Capricorn on the 15th. And at the same time as the eclipse happens, Mercury goes direct. And it doesn't return to the position where it went retrograde until February the 3rd. But Mercury, again, in Mukunda passing at that time, it's almost like there was a calling from another lifetime. That he said, I've done all the work that I have to do here. I've done all my totem work with Kate. I've done everything I need to do. And now I have other work to do back on the other side. But I have left another person there, another dog there to carry on. And the interesting thing is when you go to your other dog's chart, Ulysses. Ulysses' moon is on top of Mukunda's. Did you know that?
No.
I have no idea. Wow.
No. Yeah. Ulysses' moon is at 6 degrees of Aquarius, and Mukunda's moon is at 2 degrees of Aquarius.
Whoa.
Now, Ulysses' chart is on the opposite side. Like the eastern moon, now Ulysses' moon is on the western side. So when you put the two charts together, you get a whole pie. You get a whole chart.
Wow.
So it's like they're one half of each other. The interesting thing about Ulysses is the son was in Pisces. So what happens with a companion dog with a son, and they always relent the throne to the alpha dog. They always say, okay, you know, I will follow you. I will, you know, but when it's time, then I will take over this position. Now, again, you have a Moon-Neptune conjunction. And Ulysses, Neptune, is exactly on top of Mukunda's moon, which means they're still in touch.
Oh, well, I can tell.
Yeah, it means almost, it's almost like there is a line open of communication, because Neptune, of course, rules, you know, the astral world. It rules the other world. So there's an open channel that is going on there. So the two dogs are, like, completely tied together. It's really rather fascinating. And you wouldn't think that, because the one dog has, you know, is a Capricorn, and the other dog is a Pisces, right?
Well, let me just say that it's almost like we have a whole new dog now. It's almost like we went to the pound and got another dog who's completely different than Ulysses used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he's quiet, he's unassuming, he's always watching. Well, I think he's watching Mukunda too. Because I see him follow the spirit across the room occasionally. But that seems to have faded, because Mookie's moved on. But what I notice is that he is just the sweetest dog I have ever met in my life. And he never was that really that way before.
Wow.
I mean, Mookie was really sweet, but he was extremely, he was domineering. He was difficult. He was loving. I was totally in tune with that dog. And he was almost like Kitty was difficult. My mother, Kitty.
No, really.
Your friend, Kitty.
Never.
Yeah, it's sort of like her, domineering. And you just loved her to death and difficult. So anyway, yeah, he was like my mother.
But what happened with the Neptune-Jupiter conjunction in Aquarius that's happening right now, Ulysses has Uranus Mercury. This is really a brilliant dog. Even if this was in a person's chart, it's really brilliant. It's an intuitive,
very smart dog.
It's
intuitive
brilliance. But when this happened, Ulysses has Uranus Jupiter landed right on the Aquarius in the chart, the Aquarius Mercury. So it really opened up some other channel, like almost another brain path in Ulysses.
Well, I could see that.
Yeah, you should be able to see such a difference.
That's what it is. That's what it is.
Yes, that's what it is. So there you go. Astrology works, even if I wouldn't be telling you this.
Now, his son must be somewhere deeply on my stuff, too, like maybe my Jupiter or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
On my yacht, the Jupiter.
Uh-huh. Yes, good. Listen to you, Kate. Hey.
Yeah,
well
I have
you know.
the finger of God configuration in my chart, and I assume he falls right on that.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. I'm going back here. The interesting thing in the chart that I was looking at here is almost like the Neptune, Jupiter, Uranus, all of that falls right into your moon. I mean, all of that falls right into the area of communication.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like Mukunda and Ulysses are like a channel for you. Do you have communication like with them? I mean, all the time?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We need more than that.
Oh, yeah. The thing is that I'm deeply involved with these dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that Mookie may have passed on last week, but we called him Saint Mukunda.
Well, you know, yes, and well, that's the Neptune. But when a dog passes, it deepens you, you know, and it allows you to explore all the perimeters of your soul. And sometimes when a special dog passes, it's a gateway to a certain level of consciousness that's hard to get to in everyday life. And through their passing, you know, you can really explore aspects of your other side, like anger, pain, abandonment, all loneliness. And they grant you that this, you know, that aspect of the sacred wound that we don't look at in our daily lives. And it forces you, Kate, to look at those parts of yourself that are not yet healed sometimes, that you don't
yeah.
want to look at. So if you can look at it as a big teaching, you'll grow deeply from this. And it's very painful, but sometimes it's the greatest teacher of all. It's awareness of opening up your heart completely. And the seeds of wisdom and enlightenment are planted, you know, within the wound of the dog leaving. And what is lost always comes back in a much bigger way.
Right.
So I think, you know, because all dogs do not live a lot of times as long as human beings do. So we all experience that. You know?
Yes.
And even, you know, as a child when they sold my dog, it's a great, deep, deep, you know, loss
mm-hmm.
that you experience when a dog. Do you have a dog, Joan?
Oh, my, yes, we have.
She is a total dog lover. Oh,
oh
my
I
God.
Am just a, yes.
What's your dog's name?
I have one named Hogan and one named Harley. Harley is more mine, and Hogan is more Whitey's.
Wow.
Yeah.
I must tell you that when I was recuperating from surgery, I lived in a house with five dogs.
Mm-hmm.
This woman had five dogs. They were all rescue dogs, okay? All dogs that have gone through tremendous kind of pains. But there was one called Harley.
Oh,
and Harley was a white dog that was blind and all kinds, gone through all kinds of suffering, little white dog. And every night, in feng shui, there's a holy corner. High spiritual corner in the practice of feng shui when you feng shui somebody's house.
Right.
Every night at 10 o'clock, Harley would, you never heard the dog all day, and at 10 o'clock, Harley would go to that corner and howl.
Uh-uh.
And
I love that.
I used to say, and she would go, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, the woman would say, it's bothering you, it's bothering. I said, well, no. Harley's calling in the holy spirits every night. Every night, Joan.
Yeah.
The healing spirits for your surgery, yeah.
And he would call in the spirits. Then there was I work a lot with people in Canada. I work a lot with horses, okay, horses charts.
Mm.
And, people that race them and jump them and all dressage all of it, you know. And I have a picture of Snar above me, which this horse bonded with a friend of mine. Her name is Aggie O'Brien, and it was just like they were like one, and this horse just went and won everything, won all the races. And then something happened in Florida, and the horse got sick, and the horse came all the way back in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Aggie brought the horse back, and they x-rayed the horse or whatever, and they said, I don't know how this horse was ever winning. It had an enlarged heart.
Wow.
The heart, it was almost like the vets could not believe this horse. And that night at 4 o'clock in the morning, Aggie knew something was wrong. So she went and left Snar out. And Snar went around the outside thing three times and then died right at her feet.
Oh, how
yeah, and Aggie, you know.
That was very traumatic, you know.
Yeah, well, when you work down there with the horses, and they have all these little Jack Russells, these big
yeah.
horses have all these little totem, and this one is called Ready Return. And Ready Return was the horse that was with all her horses. It goes in, and when a horse has a baby, it licks all of the afterbirth off of the little colt,
yeah.
stays with the mother in labor, and then Reddy's job is done, and Reddy walks out, and that's that.
Yeah.
But Reddy, Aggie got Reddy for her father. She sent him to the father, and Reddy shit everywhere, and finally Reddy shit in his shoe. And her father called up and said, Aggie, I don't think this is my dog. So the dog's name is Reddy Return.
Reddy Return.
And, you know, Barbarellis, that the horse that had the thing, you know, in the race and all, that down in Bolton Center they were healing. He finally, what really killed him was that horses, I don't know if you know about, they get that disease on their hooves and it eats away.
Yeah.
So Aggie, somebody brought a horse to Aggie that was happening. And Reddy stayed in there that for weeks with that horse every day and licked the soles of its feet and healed that horse.
That is a beautiful story.
Yes,
beautiful.
And healed the horse. And I just had a friend, and all of these dogs, you know, all these stories, all of a sudden a friend, a psychologist who's really brilliant, was telling me they had this dog called Beamer. And Beamer, when children are getting the swine flu shot, Beamer greets them at the door, and she says, "Do you want to pet the dog?" And they say yes. And then Beamer goes and sits by the dog's side, and, "Do you want to pet Beamer?" And they get so enchanted with the dog, they don't even know they get the shot. But Beamer also is one of these dogs that went down into the catastrophe area, like Katrina. And the children, I didn't notice, the children were so out of hand in these places that they brought these dogs in to sit with them and to sit beside them. They're trained to do that and calm down the children. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Just
a quick aside. If anybody wants, if I could procure a job doing animal massage to those horses, I would really, really like that.
Aggie's really into that. They're very open to acupuncture. And
I would do the neuromechano.
Yeah, I'll tell her about that. They're into all of the, you know, holistic healing of the horses down there.
I mean, that would be my next step, you know, kind of like getting out of one thing and going into something like that would be so cool.
Yes.
But anyway, getting back to the subject at hand, I just had to plant that seed.
Of course.
Because there are so many. Joan tells the story. Joan, I assume the story you tell about that dog named Baby.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had a dog named Baby.
Did you?
Joan and I. Come on, Harley, Baby. I had a boxer named Baby. Go on, Joan.
Tell the story.
When Whitey lost his sight, you know, my husband is blind.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. And when he started losing his sight, he was in his late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister arranged for him to get a golden retriever. Now, this dog was not trained to be with him, but was.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Caddy Jack. His mm-hmm. name for Jack Nicholas. Well, Caddy Jack was with Whitey from the beginning of that whole adventure all the way through. They started out, they would ride in a golf cart together up to the golf course.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Whitey couldn't drive anymore, then Caddy walked along with Whitey. I mean, it was like Caddy was Whitey's eyes.
Yes.
Well, when that dog died, we all died. I can't tell you. I mean, the grief was like Kate says right now. It was just, it was just horrendous.
Ma.
And this little dog, whose name was Baby.
Aww.
Baby was a neighbor dog.
Mm-hmm.
And she just kind of wandered around. She would come visit my dogs. Well, Baby knocked on the door that day. Well, Whitey had seen Baby at the golf course, to make this long story as short as I can.
Mm-hmm.
Whitey saw Baby at the golf course, and Whitey told Baby that Caddy Jack had died. Baby came immediately here, and Kathy and I were sitting in the living room. Baby knocked on the door, and we let her in like usual. She walked all the way through the house, looked in every room, as if to prove to herself it was true. She came into the living room and sat. And that dog sat with us for about 20 minutes.
Oh, my.
Now, this is a dog that always asked for a treat, was always hungry, always wanted attention. That dog never asked for one thing. She came in. She sat as if she was making a condolence call. And she did not move for 20 minutes. And then she got up and went to the door and asked to go out.
Oh, my gosh.
That is a powerful story.
Oh,
I love
it just
that story.
Touched my soul. She knew, you know, she knew. She came to make a call. She made a call. I know she did.
She definitely did.
She made a condolence call. She sure did.
That's so beautiful.
There's a gentleman in the chat room. His name is Shaman John, whose Rottweiler is named Baby.
And that's sweet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you get a dog, my boxer was this tiny little thing. I called it Baby. And then it grew into this giant boxer that would leap the fence, and we would be out there yelling, Baby, Baby. And the giant dog would come back and knock us over. It was funny.
They are wonderful.
Oh, my gosh.
They are
just
such good
really
companions.
Do teach
you know.
Us love, don't they? Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
So does this man want to talk?
He's not... There is somebody in the... No, there isn't.
Oh, okay. Well, both of you...
There's somebody on the line. Go ahead.
Both of you have heard the Rainbow Bridge, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And about that, just the side of heaven is a place called the Rainbow Bridge. I think that is
definitely.
Just beautiful. People should, if they can, you know, go online and find it.
There's a little video that goes with it.
It's just really... very comforting, you know.
Have you seen the little book that went back again to when Kathy died? But a friend of Whitey sent us a little book called All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Yes, yes.
Have you seen that?
Yes.
And it is so dear.
And Eckhart Tolle has a new dog book out.
Oh, you're kidding.
Oh, it's the most beautiful book.
Uh-huh.
It's a yellow book, and we sent it to someone. We should have got one for you. Okay, yes, we will. It's a beautiful,
well, listen,
beautiful.
I was going to say something.
Okay.
Go ahead. Keep talking. I forget.
No, I'm... that's okay.
All these wonderful thoughts going through my mind. But,
well, tell us something about Mukunda.
Oh. Well, he... like I said, he was a very demanding kind of little guy. And he would stand in front of you and... his stare would bore into you, where he was just wasn't begging necessarily, although he became a beggar later on in life, wanted food all the time. But besides that, he just had a way that was very, very loving, and he wasn't well for the last probably year of his life, but nevertheless, he still thrived. And Ulysses, I think, helped him to live longer than he would have. Because the two of them were very, very close. Their relationship was such that even though Ulysses, Mookie was the alpha dog, Ulysses accepted that role. And and then there was a changing of the guard, maybe about a day before Mookie died, because he stopped eating, which, of course, was a total signal that things were ending. And Yuli just was used to, we used to feed Mookie first, and Mookie got the bones first, and Mookie would steal all of Ulysses' bones and all this and that. But at the end, when Mookie wouldn't eat, Yuli ate, and he would there was a changing of the guard that was taking place. And the fact that Yuli was there when Mookie died was a tremendous gift, really, because he never... wasted any time looking for him or wondering where he was or anything like that, because he knew.
Wow.
And so, also, I really think dogs and all animals have a way about death that is so natural. And I was so thankful to have this natural process where, you know, you hear stories about where, you know, people are with their dogs and they kind of hope that it's a natural process and they don't have to euthanize the animal because the animal just isn't dying.
Right.
Well, Mookie... what a blessing that he decided to just go out like that. He just went straight out, like you said.
Well, it was exactly lined up with his gestation point. So that was but it was lined up in the transit, in the secondary progression, and in the natal chart. It was lined up in all three levels.
God help us. Wow.
And I think that the transiting sun had the nodes, which is the disconnection. The nodes in the chart are the connection in, you know, when I do a chart, I explain it. They call them dragon's tail, but an easier way to explain it is the south node in a chart. It's almost like the earphones are turned up.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the little glyph, and the north node is like the earphones are on your ear. So a lot of astrologers say the south node is about the last lifetime. And I say, well, what good does that do telling them that. I mean, come on. And the North Node is the way you hook into this lifetime. So Mukunda has the North Node. The North Node was lined up exactly. This is very interesting. The South Node was lined up with the transition out, and the North Node was down here in Capricorn. So it's almost like a direct hookup to the other side. And and did you understand that, everybody?
Yeah.
I don't understand
Joan?
It. I don't understand it astrologically. I understand it spiritually.
Okay, good. Thank you, Joan.
I have to just kind of listen and take it where I can.
I'm learning. I think astrology is a symbolic language. It is a spiritual language. So if you're saying you're doing it, it's an intuitive language that hooks in at a deep, deep level of cycles. And it means basically when I work with astrology, we all sometimes have a seed emotion where something catastrophic happened to us, which is in the Uranian wheel. And then the cycle goes around, and the same conditions are set up for the same kind of catastrophe. And you've heard people say, I've gone through this, and then I went through this so many years later, and I've gone through this. The conditions are set up, but our choice of how we respond is always different. As the conditions can be set up, and we can go into emotional wrecks, but then if it happens again, we can choose. If we work on a process, we can choose how we are going to react. And then the cycle is broken in some way.
Yeah, but if we don't break it, we get to do it again.
And it gets magnified.
Mm-hmm.
It gets each time it's such an interesting thing because it gets magnified each time. And then and if you talk like a victim, like, oh, my God, this happened to me again, instead of saying, what am I not seeing here or what am I not learning here? And what astrology does is really actually show you the cycle of the conditions that are going to be set up for a certain kind of thing to happen. So a little bit off the subject, but I wanted to bring up, Greg Braden has written Fractal Time. I don't know. I just want to get in. It's such an earth-shaking book. And the thing I wanted to talk about it was that we have these magnetic things that are set up 22,000 miles out in space, which actually measure the emotional, the magnetic field of the Earth. Mm-hmm. And so this, when the first magnetic spike of this field hit, well, a huge thing, was 15 minutes after the first building was hit on 9/11. Out 22,000 miles out in space, this whole that went off the charts, and then it went off the charts when the second building was hit, and then this is research. I mean, actual research. And then the other time that it went like that, you'll never guess. It was when Princess Diana died,
mm-hmm.
and the whole world was grieving.
Mm-hmm.
So what he's tying this into is that 2012, like it's 5,125 years on the Mayan calendar, and on the other calendar it's 22,000, and in the Torah it's another thing, and Notre Dame is and all of, but the conditions are set up. But if everybody on the planet opens their heart to peace and love and praying, the emotional magnetic field on the Earth will not let a catastrophe happen.
Yeah.
And that they are
actually what we must teach people
This is actually what the research, they have a whole research lab that's testing this.
Mm-hmm.
That if each individual has peace and love in their heart and holds that during this condition, we are going to be whipped into a place that is going to be that. But everybody not everybody, that was a generalization. A lot of people seem to focus on this whole 2012 thing as if it's a disaster.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
As if it's catastrophic, when what it really is doing is just putting us into a new beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Are you there, Joan?
I guess.
Yeah.
I think we could choose.
Yeah, it's a totally new beginning. I don't see. Because I think that's what we're a part of.
Yes,
and I have Kate and I've said that. I don't understand it. Don't pretend to understand it. I accept it. We're playing a role in something that's bigger than we are, and that's okay with me.
Well, I see. Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, you understand what I'm saying. I mean, if my role is to walk through open doors, I'm a great believer in walking through open doors. And, you know, we're here for whatever reason.
Well, you know, John Cameron thought, you know, he began this movie Avatar 15 years ago. And it's so unbelievable that the cycle has come around, just like he had this billion-dollar movie in Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
And then this, and I mean, I think that these creators like Jackson with Lord of the Rings, I think they were born to do these movies, you know? They were just born to do this. But our friend just came in from Santa Fe, and he said he was in line in New York. He was in New York. He just got here. He said there were people in line in New York that had seen the film 10 times.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, and he said he was just a man that hasn't gone to the movies, a friend of his in New York, for 10 years they took to this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, he was so moved, he was crying when he came out.
Yes.
And so the movie, and I was prepared for it as another friend, me too, I was prepared for it to be a good movie. I wasn't prepared for it to totally open the strings of my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And what John Cameron has done is he did this Odyssey film where he went 200 feet under the ocean and he took pictures of plants and vegetation that we never seen. And what he's done is taken this and put that into the land of Pandora. So you're looking at that phosphorescent, luminescent light that is deep down under the ocean. And I don't know, it takes you to some kind of tranquil place. And you have to see it in 3D because you feel like you're in the place, you know. And it's this movie has come just at the right, like 2010. I think it's just right at the cycle of where it's supposed to be, and millions of people are seeing it. And it is the whole thing about the condition. We can set up the condition, and we can do it lovingly. Did you see the movie yet, Kate?
I'm thinking of going around 10:30 tonight.
Oh, my gosh. Anyway, there is a healing circle in Pandora. It's a circle of healers in the other land that is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen on the screen, around this tree. Have you seen it, Joan?
No. The last movie I saw was Yaya Sisterhood. About
okay, well, it's
years
time,
ago.
Joan. It's time, Joan, okay?
I will add that to my list.
Is it cold where you are?
Yeah, it is, actually.
Yes, it's getting colder again.
I think it's colder here.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. It's plenty cold here.
Yes, it's amazing, you know?
Well, no, you had said something about the dogs being avatars. Explain that.
Well, an avatar is chosen. I mean, an avatar is a chosen one. And then the avatar chooses who they want to be with, such as a horse or a dog or an animal, and an avatar is you know, in the book Power versus Force, the Hawkins book, it says there are only, you know, like 12 avatars on the planet at a time.
Hmm.
There can't be more than that. It's one of the vibrational energies of vibration, but those 12 can hold the planet. Okay, they can hold the planet so that it doesn't go into catastrophe. I think the dogs are also certain dogs. I'm not trying to put other dogs down. But, you know, like when I was in the house out there, like there's a certain alpha dog. There's a certain kind of energy around the dog that you know that the dog is almost a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are more avatar dogs than probably people. Now we'll probably hear from people. Okay? That's okay. I think they're totems. I think they're totems.
Yeah.
They're extension of the work, such as these dogs that are working with people with post-traumatic stress syndrome, that they can't get, that these dogs can calm them down. These dogs can comfort them. I think the dogs that are being trained in the prisons, I think the stories about the dogs that the prisoners are training, that's such a beautiful thing. The prisoners are training them to be sent to the vets with post-traumatic stress. Did you see that whole documentary?
I've seen some of that, yes.
I think it's just incredibly healing and incredibly. And the other thing about dogs is the unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't hold a grudge.
No, that's the most amazing thing. I was telling people the other day at work that the problem or the challenge with human relationships is that it's so complicated with resentments and
mm-hmm.
these deep, these wounds, as you say, and
mm-hmm.
and different things that must be healed and forgiven, and that in order to grow into a self-actualized human being. But
yes.
These dogs, it's pure love, pure love, pure love,
and
so
forgiveness.
Go, yeah.
Yeah. Forgiveness is forgiveness. It means you forgive before it happens.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the word is, forgiveness. And radical forgiveness is not just, I forgive you, but I'll remember. It's I forgive you, period. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's I forgive you. I needed the lesson, and thank you for the lesson, even though sometimes the lessons are catastrophic. But as long as you project them onto somebody else, you're not going to get the message.
Well, we do have another caller in the line.
Okay.
Let me see if they want to say something or not.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, is this Sid?
Hi, I've been listening.
Hi, Sid.
Hi,
Sid. My sister Sid. It's so great that you called in.
Yeah, I've been listening since the beginning, and on my ride home from work, I had to stop and get the mail and come home and get on another phone, but I've been listening and thinking about it in terms of the animals that I have that
yeah.
were all rescued, so I have no idea when they were born, but
mm-hmm.
I can see, connections that just must have emerged, not emerged, but have been there for us to choose them,
mm-hmm.
so it's interesting thinking about that.
Yes, and
it's interesting with rescue dogs, Sid, because a lot of them have gone through a lot of catastrophic things.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I don't know, in living in that house, I lived there 3 months, I found that they're so loving. They're so appreciative.
Yes. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It's just like amazing, you know?
Right, because they get it that you were the one that came and got them. And
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Both of our dogs were in... Yeah, pretty desperate situations. One was abused
uh-huh.
and had a very difficult first year of his life. And the other one, I feel, probably was in a very loving home, but maybe her mistress or master died, and then she was kind of left
mm-hmm.
go, because she definitely wanders. So
is that little Dory?
Yeah, she was astray, but I can tell that she wasn't abused.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely lost, but that's different than abused. But the other one was abused, and so it's taken a while for him to trust. And I don't know if he'll ever get there or not, but he trusts us now.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't trust other people who might be around.
Right.
So it's interesting.
And sometimes they trust if they were abused by a man. This one dog, every time a man would come in the house, he would go really crazy.
Right, right.
And go and hide. So they figured that it must have been abused, from a male.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it seemed like that at first, but he hides when anybody comes. It could be a child, it could be a man, it could be a woman, it can be anybody.
Uh-huh.
But he loves other dogs. So there's no doubt about that. He has no fear of other dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So he's always ready to play if another dog shows up. But he's very, very wary of people.
Wow.
Yeah.
How cold is it where you are?
It's not too bad. Around 60 degrees.
Oh, wow. That's
not bad.
But see, it's always damp here.
Yeah.
The sun did come out for a little while today. Enough to hurt
raining.
Our eyes. No,
uh-huh.
It's raining. It's been raining today, and then the sun came out for a while. And now it's kind of drizzling again.
You have rainbows.
We do, but I haven't had any rainbows for a while. It takes some sun to have a rainbow.
Yeah. Sid is, for everybody in the chat room, lives in Eugene, Oregon, and, of course, they're now in the rainy season.
Mm-hmm. In the Willamette Valley, where it's just very, very
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of rainbows. It's known for its rainbows, and it's fun when they arrive because they have double and triple rainbows. I mean, the rainbows don't quit. So that's
Wow.
But
a land of rainbows.
Yeah, I like them too. But January, this January is just very, very. Drab. Let me see what the word is. Anyway,
bleak.
Bleak. Gray. It's really, really gray. So,
wow.
So, and the mice are busy because our dog is going nuts. Both dogs are going nuts. Like, she's right now trying to crawl into the cabinet because she knows there's mice around. I can see them running around. I hate catching them. I hate trapping them and, you know.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to have to do something soon, though, because I think they're a little out of control. But
oh, wow.
Yes, I have a little one that visits me here in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And every time she, I don't know why he, the little thing keeps forgetting that I'm here, but suddenly sees me and runs the other way, then suddenly comes out again. Oh, she's still there.
Wow.
Well,
does she have a name, Kate?
Oh, it's
no.
It's a little church mouse.
Oh, okay.
You haven't named it yet.
CM, church mouse.
Oh, okay, okay.
Well, Keto caught one last night and threw it in the air, and the cat caught it.
Oh, my gosh.
Talk about double teaming.
That was
double
outside.
Team.
Yeah. That wasn't
That's
in the house. That was outside, yeah.
Wow.
So we live in the country, so we have...
No, I got that.
Country
well,
details here.
Yeah, this is the time of year when they really you have to really clean everything up because it doesn't
feeling,
matter because they're already here. So
I'm feeling that, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So the dog kind of is helping me know exactly where to go first. Or next.
Well, doesn't little Dory kill mice?
I think so, because since we've had her, I don't know about mice, but since we've had her, the moles have disappeared out of our yard and the guy next door, too. So the neighbors and us have seen a lack of the hills, you know, the mole hills that you get in your yard when they're around.
Oh, yeah.
So we don't know whether she's doing something to them or the moles are getting it, that they have a predator that they want to avoid.
Wow.
So I think moles have left to go other places. They've got plenty of room around here to go somewhere else, so they've gone somewhere else, I think. But the mice don't get it.
She's doing her job, yeah.
Oh, she's a great dog. She's amazing.
Wow.
So. Yes, and so what I've noticed with telling my Mukunda story, because I had to go to work over the weekend, and I, you know, I couldn't really call off sick because my dog died, even though...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would like to take an extended leave of absence, actually, but the fact is that I went to work, and people start thinking about the fact, oh, my gosh, my dog is getting older, and, oh, yeah, this is going to happen to them, and
yeah,
it's just really difficult for people.
And then what
happened on Sunday night, which was such a miracle, was that the staff, we didn't have that many patients. And I think, if anybody read my prayer for that day, it just says that, you know, the barometric pressure was steady. The moon is not full and it's not new. And when it's sort of like in between there, people aren't really giving birth that much. You know, birthing has a lot to do with barometric pressure.
Wow.
In some ways, you know. I mean, obviously when it's time. But anyway, the staff decided to... put me to work in a way that was so cool. I gave the whole labor and delivery staff neuromechanomassages all night long.
Oh, wow.
And it was like really intense because I got into this zone of a healing zone of the neuromechanomassage, for those of us who are here and who will be listening later, is a massage that Sid knows about, but very few people know about it. It's something that... that I would love to get out into the world. And it originated with a woman named Ella Kilgus, who started working on donkeys. So it was something that was done on animals to begin with. And then the philosopher William James, who wrote The Variety of Religious Experiences, sort of took her under his wing and they kind of developed a whole thing around this massage. And then she had retreat centers where she did this massage. It was very popular at the turn of the 1900s, around that time. It was very popular. She did it for as long as she could stand, you know, because she did it all of she. It was the kind of thing where when we were kids, we got treatments from her, and she would be carried into the treatment room.
Oh, my gosh.
She was old, very old.
You remember that, Kate?
Oh, yeah. I'll never forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Very old, frail. She'd be carried in, and then she'd stand up like some sort of huge entity, and she'd put her hand on you, and you never forgot it. It was like strong, powerful stuff. And, of course, I was very young, and I thought, I got to learn how to do this. I've known how to do this all my life. But now I'm coming to the point where I've got to get this thing out.
Yeah.
I've got to get it out. And I don't know how, except to talk about it here. I wrote it in that prayer the other day, and people have been writing to me about, oh, yeah, I want to learn how to do that. Somebody wanted me to go to a corrections institute and do it to the prisoners, but I'd rather do it on horses, personally. So there you have it.
Yes.
I just had to tell that story. So it was a really beautiful experience to do this to people. And I do it on my patients all the time, but to do it for the staff who, a lot of these people are really stressed out, and they have to realize that they have the power to heal. Their nurses, they need to touch their patients. They need to realize they have the power to heal, and that's why we are nurses. But a lot of times, you know, people are oriented as nurses to give drugs, to give medicines, to sort of hope that, you know, give a bunch of sleeping medicines so people sleep all night and they don't bother you, sort of thing. At the heart of it all, people do not want to touch their patients. So I'm hoping we can break through that.
When I was in the hospital, that the nurses, it was remarkable to me that the nurses were so into Reiki.
Yeah, but nowadays it's happening.
Yeah, it was just they were all into Reiki and altered and healed.
Yeah, there's no touching, actually, very much anyway with Reiki.
Yeah.
Kate, I have to tell you a weird story while you're talking about this real quick.
Mm-hmm.
1 year, I gave my friend Kathy a book, and it was on healing touch, which was, this was 15 years ago when all that was just coming out.
Uh-huh.
She's not a nurse. She's a teacher. And when I gave it to him, we're both kind of weird, you know, like we all are. I said, Kathy, I don't know why you have this book, but I was supposed to buy it for you.
Oh.
And we never could figure it out. But every time you say that, Kate, I think about that book.
Oh,
it was
like
I want to get Kathy to find it, and I want to see if the girl on the front looks like you.
Oh, wow.
I just think it was like I don't know.
That's neat.
You know, like
could
something
it be,
an open
Dorothy,
door.
Is her name Dorothy Krager, the author of that book? it's called
On Healing Touch.
Yeah, the
was
Healing Touch
nurse?
Is what it's called.
Was she a nurse?
I don't know if she really was a nurse, but certainly it's the kind of thing where it's an accepted modality in many, many hospitals where people like Mehmet Oz, before he's done what he's done now, and he's on the Oprah show and he's written all these books. And, before
there's
all
a
that,
nurse
he,
on the front of this book, and I think she's a blonde.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Mehmet Oz had therapeutic touch people in his operating rooms. He would never cardiac surgery unless he knew that person was ready for it. They surrounded with masseuses, but these people weren't really massaging in the cardiac rooms. They would be meditating out in the waiting room on the healing of that patient. And he had tremendous luck with his, outcomes with his patients. But I don't think he was, after a while they shut it down and, that's what he was really here for. And then now he's going on to do other things. So, Therapeutic Touch, is that what the name of the book was? Therapeutic Touch?
I think, that could be all in my mind. But
that's a good mind.
Every time you say that, I picture that book. It's just weird. I'm going to find the book. You're going to read it. I don't know what it is. But it's just
whatever the book is.
I was driven to buy it, and goodness knows I don't buy things lightly. So it's real interesting. For some reason, that book's supposed to be floating around. Now, I hope she hadn't put it in a yard sale somewhere. But anyway, it's interesting. One of those little things that in life that you wonder, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What do you call them? You call them something. Divine
connections.
Divine synchronicities. Yes.
Synchronicities, yes. Those.
That's elegant.
I love those. Yeah.
Yes.
One of my favorite things.
I just think that we're all so fortunate to be alive now, and we can do so much good in the world, and it just feels. And Mukunda, like you say, he was an avatar.
Yes.
He was, the way he died like that was shocking, you know, to see him just whiz right out of there. Like I said, a lot of people don't go to get their dogs put down lightly, you know, because the fact is that a lot of these dogs just won't go.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to, and they're just suffering to death, you know. But Mookie really didn't. He might have been in pain, and we took care of that, but he was not suffering. And
well, don't you think that a lot of times that the dogs, that the human beings do not let them go?
Yeah.
They hold on to them instead of when the dog is really ready to go. I think you knew, and you were in the whole process of lovingly letting the dog go.
Well, I started writing the prayers for daily healing just because I knew there's just a lot of different things that are happening in my life that are kind of traumatic, and I knew one of them was that this dog was going to die.
Right.
So at 3 a.m. in the morning, there would be, as I was writing a prayer, suddenly I asked the angels to take him if he was ready, you know, that kind of thing, whereas I didn't have any conscious, I really didn't want to believe that he was dying. But suddenly this thing would come through, and I put it down, and that's what
mm-hmm.
it was.
Right.
There is somebody else on the line. Let me just say, have them come on and say hello. Hello there.
Hello, Kate. It's Betty.
Oh,
hey, Joe.
Betty.
Oh,
I'm
Betty
with
you.
Joe's sister.
Oh,
Betty.
It's
nice.
I just had to share that I've enjoyed the show so much, but I don't know if Joan told you, but in death comes life, and there's a possibility that I'll be getting a dog. And
ooh.
I haven't had one in quite a while. So I'll keep you posted on that. And,
please.
It'll be an interesting experience. He has visited. My son rescued him. He's a rescue dog. And right now he's still with my son, but he visited over Christmas. And you do think about where they were. You know, I was thinking about Sid talking about all the rescue dogs, and you wonder if they have memories of where they were.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a beautiful animal, and he's 7 years old, an American Eskimo, and a miniature.
Oh, my gosh, beautiful.
He's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so happy here, but it's going to be interesting to see who wins the battle of the dog, because he's bonding with Chuck so much, my son. So, but anyway, it's been a great show, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I wish I knew Zeus's birth date so we could do the astrology with Zeus. It would be interesting because of the change of life for him, you know. He's 7 years old, and so,
well, what you could do, the very moment that he comes into your house, Betty, then note the time and date, and then,
mm-hmm.
and then that would be a good time to do a chart on that. You know, you don't really, and the same with you, Sid, with little Dory.
Yeah.
You might remember the day that she came,
mm-hmm.
and that would be the point of entry. You know.
Okay. Okay.
Right.
I'll
yeah,
do
we
that.
Do know that.
That
would be the birth in the new environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Which is very poignant.
Okay,
yeah.
I'll do that, and I'll keep you posted, okay?
Sure.
Wonderful.
So let me say hello, and time is about out, so I'm going to run. But good night, all, and thanks
good night.
Again.
Love you.
Thank you
love
so
you
much
you
for
darling.
Calling, Betty.
Bye-bye.
We appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
This has been very enlightening, and one thing I would like a little more clarity on, and I will call you, Sheila, is the fact that Ulysses' son is on my Jupiter. Yeah, I want to talk more about that at some point.
Moon, Kate, moon.
It's
sun-moon conjunction.
Yeah. His sun is 19 or 20 Pisces.
Yeah.
So that would rest on my Jupiter.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, we're talking about Ulysses. Okay.
Yeah, Ulysses. Yeah.
Talking about Macunda. Okay.
We'll put these charts on the blog. If that's
all right. All right. Love to all.
Love
until
you
next,
all.
Next month.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Love you.
Bye-bye.
I'm going to play music for Mother and Child by C.B. Jensen, who is a genius, a musical genius. Thank you, everybody. You can go to www.musicformotherandchild.com. And buy it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Love you.